I kept a battery-powered Kojak light in the glove compartment of my personal and put it on the roof as soon as I was out of town, running my car up to 80 and trusting to the red flasher to get anyone ahead of me out of my way. There weren't many. Western Pennsylvania folks roll up the sidewalks early on most weeknights. It was only 4 miles back to the barracks, but the run seemed to take an hour. I kept thinking about how my heart sank each time Ennis's sister, the dragon, walked into the barracks under the haystack heap of her outrageous henna hair. I kept thinking, "Get out of here, you're too close." And I didn't even like her. How much worse would it be to have to face Michelle Wilcox, especially if she had the twins, the little Jays, with her? I drove up the driveway too fast, just as Eddie and George had done a dozen or so years before, wanting to be rid of their unpleasant prisoners so they could go over to Poteenville, where it must have seemed half the world was going up in smoke. The names of old songs. "I Met Him on a Sunday," "Ballroom Blitz," "Sugar, Sugar," jigged senselessly up and down my head. Foolish, but better than asking myself what I'd do if the Bel Air was back, but empty. What I'd do if Ned Wilcox was gone off the face of the earth. The Bel Air was back, as I'd known it would be. He'd parked it where Arky's truck had been earlier, and it was empty. I could see that in the first splash of my headlights. The song titles dropped out of my head. What replaced them was a cold readiness, the kind that comes by itself, empty-handed and without plans, ready to improvise. The Buick had taken hold of Kurt's boy. Even while we'd been sitting with him, conducting our own peculiar kind of wake for his dad and trying to be his friend, it had reached out and taken hold of him. If there was still a chance to take him back, I'd do well not to bitch it up by thinking too much. Steph, probably worried at the sight of a single Kojak instead of a rack of roof lights, poked her head out of the back door. "Who's that? Who's there?" "It's me, Steph." I got out of the car, leaving it parked where it was, with the red bubble flashing on the roof over the driver's seat. If anyone came hauling in behind me, it would at least keep them from rear-ending my car. "Go back inside."
"What's wrong?"
"Nothing."
"That's what he said."
She pointed at the Bel Air and then stalked back inside. I ran for the roll-up door of Shed B and the stutter pulse of the light. So many stressful moments of my life have been lit by flashers. A John Q stopped or overtaken by flashers is always frightened. They have no idea what those same lights sometimes do to us and what we have seen by their glow. We always left a light on in the shed, but it was brighter than a single night light in there now, and the side door was standing open. I thought about diverting to it, then kept on as I was. I wanted a look at the playing field before anything else. What I'd been most afraid of seeing was nothing but the Buick. Looking in, I discovered something scarier. The boy was sitting behind the roadmaster's oversized steering wheel with his chest smashed in. There was nothing where his shirt had been except a bright, bloody ruin. My legs started to unbuckle at the knees, and then I realized it wasn't blood I was looking at after all. Maybe not blood. The shape was too regular. There was a straight red line running just below the round neck of his blue T-shirt, and corners, neat, right-angled corners. No, not blood. The gas can Arky kept for the mower. Ned shifted behind the wheel, and one of his hands came into view. It moved slowly, dreamily. There was a Beretta in it. Had he been driving around with his father's sidearm in the trunk of the Bel Air, perhaps even in the glove compartment? I decided it didn't matter. He was sitting in that death trap with gas and a gun. Kill or cure, I'd thought. It had never crossed my mind to think he might try doing both at the same time.